Hello everyone, and thanks for coming. Thanks Adam for that eloquent discussion. It's my idea that you're all here, so if you have a terrible day, come to me and say so. I'm going to talk a little more about the BL, but more from a kind of collecting angle really, as opposed to the kind of stuff we already have, and the pilot projects I've been working on for the last 6 months. And because I'm not nowhere near as articulate as Mr. Tovell, I'm just going to do this, if you can. Maestro. Wasn't quite as timed as I wanted it to be. That's enough of that. In seriousness, you should check out that recording. It does end in something apocalyptic towards the end. That's only 3 of 5 minutes. So yeah, what are we doing with digital sound and music? As I say, it's a 6-month project, starting October of last year, so catching up. Set up with funds made available to help this kind of slow transitional stage, BL-wide, so not just music, a transition from the acquisition of physical stuff to digital stuff. As some or all may know, the current situation for the BL Sound Archive is physical and digital sound recordings collected under voluntary arrangements, so we have to beg and steal and borrow and rely on the generosity of the industry to give us stuff, because legal deposit in the UK is not a thing that exists. The gentlemen down at the front here from the National Library of Norway are in the blessed situation where legal deposit does exist. They're going to talk about that later on in the afternoon. For us, for our colleagues, for our curators, for accessions team, they're constantly chasing people to put things in boxes and deliver it to us on a weekly, monthly basis. In the digital domain, in theory, one might imagine it becomes easier. As we'll see, it's not all that. Presently, the technical infrastructure we have at the BL is not quite up to speed with the way that the digital supply chain and the music industry works, so we're working on that. And we do collect digital downloads on a very ad hoc, one-off, small little collections, downloading off Bandcamp and such, but it's not scalable. So the brainchild that I thought we'd get away with this is Metable at BL. Metable are camera-based developers, but walking distance from this very building. This is not a sales pitch, but it's good to give a background of what they actually do. They specialise in catalogue management, record labels, and we've asked them to provide an interface to allow us to acquire, ingest, catalogue music from the supply chain. These guys have got a lot of experience in digital music, whereas relatively we don't. So what is Metable at BL going to do for us and going to make our lives a lot easier? Take deliveries across FTP from labels, aggregators, platforms. Standards, we're going to talk a lot about that all day, really. So where possible, the de facto standard for the music industry is the DDX. We're hoping to get metadata in that fashion. This is quite an important one. So provide an interface for British Library curators to check and edit products on an ad hoc basis, and do all sorts of clever file type standardization, and do exports from the DDX into a cataloging state for us to then take on. There's an added element to this, which I'll discuss. So this interface will also help us augment metadata with extra sources from those esteemed institutions listed there. So API integration. For many years, we have, as an institution, bought in metadata from Roe v. Gracenote, National Discography, Search Muse, I forget what it's called now, and variations on that. We came to realise that the metadata that was coming from those sources was not really suitable for the kind of way we were working. So, you know, we're going to hear about APIs and the way developers are really kind of seeping into how the music industry should be going and should be working. So we want to kind of a slice of that pie. Metable at BL will allow us to plug into Discogs, Music Brains, and Decibel and allow our curators, catalogers, accessioners, any staff really, to query these databases through APIs. This, in real terms, this is a really exciting development for us. This will allow our staff, where we've had collections that are coming over time and just through the processes of time become neglected and become lacking in metadata, lacking in the important stuff that makes collections valid and interesting. So sometime down the line, a box of records with minimum skeleton entries on the catalogue, if a curator or a cataloguer can then address the artist, label, era, genre, via these APIs and these databases, you know, we could be left with some really interesting records. So this is the bit where I do a test. And now I do say beta version there, and that is with reason. This is still a very fresh piece of software. So this is what Metable at BL will look like. Again, it's probably a bit too premature for me to be checking this in front of many people, but we'll see how we go. So there's just a default dummy record in the Rolling Stone Sticky Fingers, and there it loads. This is the hazard. So what we have here is a kind of dummy record. So XML was created in the DDX standard, and then there's a clever kind of mapping process. So the tags and the fields that DDX supplies are then normalized to tags that the Sound Archive catalog understands. So we call our artists contributor, you see that? 702, the Rolling Stones, and so on. There's various idiosyncratic tags that we use. It's a kind of form of mark, if anyone understands that. I don't necessarily. So here's our supplier metadata. So this has come in from a distributor and aggregator. We can amend this. We can do all sorts of things like that. We can also add artists. So if at one point I wanted to be part of the Rolling Stones, that I could, you know, my dream would be there. If only at one time. If that saves, there we go, I'm in there, alongside Mick and the boys. What we can also do is amend. As I say, I'm not going to test this out because it's a bit shaky presently, because it's very early days, but for curators to come across this and they can search across Decibel, Music Brains, and Discogs and interrogate the various iterations of Sticky Fingers and whatever title that's existed over the years. So that gives us a really rich, in-depth possibilities. And then we go down to track level. So this is the product level, the headline kind of information. So what's my favourite song on this? Anyone? There we go. So we can get even more detail now. And what's great about using the APIs and the databases for this. Whereas we've got our contributors, the bog standard 4, is it Rolling Stones? Yes, 5. We can also get down to some serious detail, should we wish. So this particular one is coming from Decibel, I believe. So Marianne gets a shout there. We can add her to the credits. Ry Cooder played on this album, apparently. That's interesting. This is all fascinating stuff to me. I've clearly prepared for this well. Anyway, you can understand the possibilities and the potential of a piece of software like this to us. I shall skip back to the presentation now. So, that's Metabol at BL. And I'll go beyond that. So, for any of this to work, we need to build relationships. This is one of the reasons why a lot of you are in the room here. An event like this brings a lot of people from different parts of the industry together and say, look, here we are with the British Library Sound Archive. We have all these great stuff and, you know, give us more stuff. So, we really need your help for these things to work. So, the Sound Archive is fragmented into different curatorial areas. So, we have pop, classical, world traditional music, natural sounds and wildlife, radio, moving image, drama and literature. The three areas I'm considered interested in for this project are pop, world traditional and classical. So, the next session is a Q&A with Leslie from The Beggars and Rory Gibb from The Quieters. They're going to talk about The Beggars group and fascinating history therein, but also talk about how they're one of the leading lights in dealing with digital music. Beggars came to us a year or so ago, I guess, Andy? Yes? Looking for how we do things. So a relationship has formed there, and we have started an actual real-life connection. So, Beggars Group, their assets, their material, I hate using the word assets, music, will be delivered through Consolidated Independent, normalised by our Metabol BL software, and then all those lovely records will then be exported to the Sound Archive catalogue. The full-back catalogue, which stands 2,000-ish releases, has been delivered to local storage, so that's ongoing. We're speaking to various other labels about this, and for their buy-in, they need to sign up some donation guidelines. So we want to work with 10, 11 key kind of UK indies, and what can we offer? We can offer in perpetuity storage and the chance for generations of researchers to consult their records, their catalogues for years to come. And it's the British Library. Why wouldn't you want to be in a place like this? In the world and traditional music area, we've got various relationships with distributors like Harmonium Mundi and Proper. We're looking to build more with small UK indies, such as the ones represented there. In classical world, the picture's a little more complicated, but we're getting there slowly with labels like Hyperion and NMC. This is baby steps. We are in a pilot phase, so hopefully maybe one day we can work with a DG and Decca about donating digital content. So outside of the kind of traditional record label models, I've been looking at ways in which we can interact with direct-to-consumer platforms like Bandcamp and Surus, SoundCloud, which is obviously just phenomenally huge in what it can offer. All the kind of free MP3 blogs, public domain, open music websites. A word that the British Library is very fond of at the minute is connecting. So this notion, this quite controversial notion that we don't connect, we don't collect anything. We just give host to it. We point to it and use our user base as a kind of audience for that. The guys from the BBC playlist are here today, and they're going to do a presentation about that very concept and their relationship with Deezer and Spotify and such. Maybe this is a model the British Library goes down with the BBC as well. Who knows? This is all in the realms of fantasy so far. And then there's the APIs that amazing sites like Uberweb and FMA and Open Music. This is all open stuff, the Internet Archive. But for us as a governmental funded institution, there are certain ethical, legal, moral concerns that unfortunately there's a lot of risk there for us to really engage with those sites, sadly, with a blessed heart. So when does music stop being music? You know, that the audio illustration from earlier, that cacophony of stuff and of rackets. You no longer just have releases coming from labels, releases coming from artists themselves. You've got applications. Whether this is a passing kind of fad, who knows? Do we start collecting it? Who knows? There's also MIDI as well. Could we go down that route, which is a pretty scary route of collecting MIDI files, I must admit. So where are we going? What do we want? So we want to develop Metable. It's a fully functioning platform, one that works fully and wonderfully for all our users. We want to continue to encourage labels to interact with us, donate their material either physically or digitally. We'd like to work with technical and metadata partners on collaborations. Some of you are in the audience here today, so that's ongoing. Again, explore possible high-level DCMS-backed schemes with the BBC, BFI, academia. Ultimately, there are kind of blue sky ideas of really pushing the legal deposit question again and seeing what we can do with that. That might be useful. I think that's about it. So a couple of email addresses there, my own, if your particular areas of digital music or vinyl, CDs, physical stuff, curated pop music, Andy, you introduced proceedings, drop him a line, ask some questions. And I think that's it for me. So, yeah, any questions on that?
Is there any reason at all why you can't make the deposit of recordings equivalent to the deposit of books? In other words, legal copyright deposit to the British Library. Is there a reason why that doesn't happen? And can't you lobby for it? It would save you a lot of trouble.
I think maybe the man with the yellow microphone who's been trying to lobby for many years, or at least part of the picture, might be able to answer better than I, actually.
There have been representations made over the years, but for various reasons that we often can't... I beg your pardon?
It's the reasons I'm asking about. What reasons do they give you for not giving you parity?
I think there are other people here who may know better than me, actually. Richard Chesser, over there, is the person who can answer that question.
Hello, I'm the head of music here at the British Library. Yes, we would very much like to have the deposit of recordings on a statutory footing. One of the arguments advanced why it's not necessary is that, well, we have voluntary deposit, so it's not necessary to make it any more firm. But in practice, it doesn't work as well as it might do. So we would be very happy for it to be consolidated on a statutory basis. That's not a question that we can answer. We have lobbied for this, but... that it's not necessary, and it's the strength of the recording industry as well wanting to maintain that position.
The main argument against collecting audio and video material is the balance between the public interest in archiving and being able to collect this material for the long term and potentially the commercial damage. So, I mean, what we have always argued is that there would be no commercial damage because we're keeping the recordings here on the premises. And certainly that was what we were able to negotiate for text-based material. But, as Richard says, I think, the voluntary side of it was also one part of the equation, but it's also this balance between the public interest and the private interest. And I should also say that it's something we're going to look at in the review of the regulations in possibly 2017.
Hello, I'm Anne Mochaboom. I'm the head of music at the National Library of Scotland. So Richard Chesser
little sister up north. I have always seen this as a real problem, that because there was this long-standing voluntary arrangement at the British Library going back, well, over 50 years now, it was not seen as being necessary to actually extend this to be a real legal deposit, because this means there's only one copy available to the whole country, and for Scottish or Welsh citizens, they do not really have easy access as like people living in around London in the southeast or anywhere in England, I suppose. And I have had quite a lot of users who kept asking, well, cannot you get access to the recording? Can the National Library of Scotland reading room not be an extension of the British Library reading room, so that one can make arrangements to give access temporarily? So I think there's quite a lot of scope in a way in the future, but I think it's just the commercial lobby from the industry that is quite scared of material that might suddenly go out and be pirated and so on. But I think certainly it's something that we should really keep working on. And I mean, the e-deposit that we now have only gives access to one concurrent use across the national libraries and the legal deposit libraries. So one might perhaps come up with some kind of scheme that could be similar to that, just to help the industry also, you know, see that it's not that we want to go and damage any sales or anything, you know. Anyway.
Yes.
The view from the north, I think.
Hi, I'm Kieran. I'm general manager of Consolidated Independent, so working with Leslie and Baggers. I just had a question for you, Alex, about the editability of the metadata within that Metable system. If you're receiving a DDEX feed from an authoritative source, why should the content of those fields be editable by archivists within the British Library? I'd say that seems dangerous to me.
Anyway, it's break time now. dangerous to who there, Kieran? Who'd you say?
Sorry. If the record label or the owner of that sound recording is telling you that the track title is whatever it is, why should that be changeable?
Good question.
I think I can see the point with adding contributors who might not appear in the metadata message, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think my demonstration, my flippant response to adding me is a Rolling Stone.
No, but I see the value in that.
Yeah.
for you. But things like track titles and artist name, I think particularly.
It's a very valid point. I think what we've got to kind of work out between ourselves as institutionally is, you know, we have faith in our cataloguers and our accessioners to make these choices. Mm. I think that the reason behind linking up with Music Brains, Decibel, Discogs is a way of augmenting rather than editing. I think that's the key definition. We certainly won't be making failed swim choices of putting me in the Stones.
Right.
Very good question. These are questions that we'll continue to iron out internally when we roll out a system properly. Yeah. Again, it's beta stage.
Yeah, fine. Thanks.
Do you have a relationship with the PPL database?
I'm looking for a fellow colleague to help me out on this one. Have we?
I think we have had, in the past, we had a relationship with what was known as National Discography, which is a database set up by the MCPS, which then became part of the PRS for Music database. But we don't source data from there anymore.
Thank you so much. I have a question which was in my head, but I'd like to address the point my fellow namesake, I'm also called Kieran, made earlier. Is I spent an hour, and I work in reissues, I have a label. I spent an hour and a half yesterday afternoon correcting label copy, which had been sent to me by a rights holder who is Sony, that was riddled with errors for the release that I'm putting out in I've just noted, May. They had dates wrong, song titles wrong, songwriters spelt three different ways. So you can't take on trust that whoever is sending you the data is actually correct. You have to sit down. I had to do it with some of it with the original records, the vinyl. However, my question was, there seems to be something here, and I've looked through the speakers today, and you, Alex, just mentioned UK indies. I don't see Universal, Sony, Warner's, the new Parlophone EMI. Where are the majors in all this?
It's a good question. I think we've been trying. Andy will probably chip in here as well. We've been trying to get the majors on the side for some years with not a great deal of success. So I think what we wanted to do was start with the guys who really make the most innovative decisions and do the most interesting stuff. And just that if we get enough independent interest on board, then maybe someone, Universal, will be interested.
Yeah, we have, we get a regular supply of physical material in from Universal. That's pretty much standard day to day. In the past, we had better relationships with the other majors, and that's fallen into kind of disrepair, that relationship, for a bit of a while. So that's something that we're very conscious of, and we're trying to re-establish our relationships with them. And we're trying to do that at a very senior level, so that it's quite difficult for us to approach major corporations, find the right person, get an agreement with them that they will send us stuff. And then even if we get that agreement in the past, that person has left, someone else replaces them, they don't send it. So, it's something we're very aware of and we're constantly trying to redress.
I think last one, yeah, conscious of time. Yeah.
Hi, thank you for a very exciting presentation. I just want to pick up on the metadata theme because there are errors, as we know. And the question is, does Metabo also send... Can you correct the metadata in Discogs and send it back? Is it a two-way process, or is it just you take...
I think that's, again, great question. You know, I think this embryonic kind of stage we're at, not yet, but I think it'd be great to get on board these kind of ecosystem, you know, get everyone working together to get the best kind of metadata possible.
The idea, I mean, it's crowdsourcing.
It's an ideal, yeah.
But is the plugin now, or is an API going back in there now?
I think it's just one way, so it comes to us, but not back.
Okay.
I think.
Thank you.
Okay, final one, Lucy.
Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to make one final comment, really, about working with the major labels and Digital Deposit. I mean, basically, to make Digital Deposit work, we need to work with everybody. So that's the major labels and the independents. And I think what was so successful about what we've been able to do for text-based material, you know, 10 years of discussion to get to the point where we had regulations that everybody was happy with. But we did have all of the major players around the table. We had, you know, every single major publishing association you can think of. And we governed that relationship going forwards with those people around the table every 3 months. So, you know, if we want to get Digital Deposit for audio, which I think would be absolutely fantastic and totally important when there is so much free digital material out there on the internet that we cannot possibly clear the copyright for, then we want to work with everybody. And if you're able to help us do that, if there are people in the room that are able to help us do that, then we'd love to work with you.
Okay. That's an impassioned plea. Good. All right, so we've got about a 10, 15-minute quick, short break to hoover up the rest of the teas and coffees, and then we will be back with Leslie Bleakley and Roy Gibb, rather. So 20 past the hour. Thanks.